Oh, this is too purple for words. I can't go on. If you can read it, if you can bring yourself to read
it. And that. Judy Canova flicks were popular. Usually there was no one on the bridge at such times, or even ever in the flotilla of girls were usually down in the bilge with the stokers and that breed of creatures who position themselves underneath the ribaldness.
I always wanted a bed that could fly in the sky on starry nights, on cold starry nights when you laid snuggling in your bed and feeling sorry for all the cats that had to be out walking the city streets on such a cold night. Why, oh why, do foul hags fly in the sky on cold starry nights? In winter, Somebody told me about some color film for $3.
From the Sears and Roebuck? Sears and
Roebuck? Oh! Oh, Tony,
turn
look.
The light on.
Yeah. And the, can you see this being photographed in this flickering light? Oh, look! Oh, boy, it's hallucinatory. Oh, a scene of barbaric splendor. And the projector flicker can be modulated.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Tony, can you see that?
Mm-hmm.
Have your actual eyes in reality ever seen anything as exaggerated and raging as this? I mean, aside from theatrical experience. Oh! I'll hold one of my green jewels over the projector lens. Tell me when.
Now.
Oh, Madre. And that little touch of color up there, see? Oh, Madre! Oh, look.
I'm looking at it through a green jewel, but it doesn't even make sense.
So you're recording now, aren't you?
Yeah.
So start from the beginning.
Start from the beginning.
Now, what is that Frank likes to lap wine, jugs of wine?
Yes, Frank, he's very attracted to gallon jugs of a certain kind of red sweet wine. One night, I was with Francine when she was on a mescaline contact high, and one of these red sweet wine highs. And I heard that night, I heard from Francine.
Can you remember anything she said, like?
That which mortal ears have never before.
Can you remember anything, like, you name it, I'll shoot it?
Francine told me about her normal love.
Really?
Yes. It was, with Mary. A girl who was a model of fur coats in the window of Klein's department store.
Wow.
When Klein's was Klein's.
And then what else does this girl do? I mean, keeps on. Well, I guess that's enough for her to do. But I mean, oh, anything else? Can you remember anything that he said? Like, you name it, I'll shoot it. Or, Mary, get off the pot. Things like that. Was there any new ones?
What?
Never been heard before.
What do you mean?
Well, things like that. What do you call those? Refrains? Or, no. Is that what you call them? Sayings? Francine's
aphorisms. Aphorisms.
Or Franciism. Franciism. Or Francine-ish.
Or Transcene-ish.
Yes. Yes.
And, transoms.
Yes. Can you remember any of those?
Yes, I can, quite distinctly.
For instance?
Well, it was Francine's chance to wed a man who pressed the sweet of marriage upon her when she was still working in the carnival as Frances Francine. She was on the ballet when the hunchback came over on this little cart mounted on roller skates that it got around them and told her that there was someone, there was a limousine outside. And that someone was requesting to deliver, to see or Francine or to give her flowers. And so this was a man, an older man that she had seen in the audience a few times. And it happened that he was the man that owned the biggest nightclub in a place in a city in Kentucky. What is the city in Kentucky? Louisville. The biggest nightclub in Louisville, Kentucky, or something like that. And he told her that he was very sorry for he had seen her act and that he was very touched. And he was sorry that there was nothing that science could do to help her. But that he admired her spirit and her courage and her beauty and her and he wanted to marry her and give her a home and security and his grandmother's jewels. So he took her home and there was a dinner and he introduced her to the servants and they were very snotty with her. But she was regal and dignified and didn't, as she said to me once, it didn't matter. I couldn't have cared less. That's what she said. Yes, I couldn't have. Wait, no. What is it that Frank always.
I couldn't care less. I couldn't be more annoyed.
I couldn't be more annoyed. I couldn't be less annoyed.
Less annoyed, yes.
And so they were seated at the dinner table and they were served by the servants. And towards the end of her stay, the servants came to love her and they respected her and her dignity and her quick comebacks that evidently she answered their jibes with and actually respected her and admired her and talked about her in hushed tones in the orange shadows behind the stairs and so Francine, the night waxed on, and Francine realized that this man, the owner
of the biggest nightclub in Louisville, Kentucky, didn't know that he, Frankie, was not what she seemed.
What did he tell me he was? She was.
I mean, the man thought that Frankie was a woman. And then, after the meal, when Francine's head was giddy and she felt bubbly, he took her into another room and opened the safe and brought out his grandmother's jewels. And Francine admired them. And I think that that's when her heart broke. I think that's when Frankie's heart broke. I think that's when he went mad. And he declined the offer of marriage and said, no, I am not, I am not what I seem to be, and left. The title of this is The Horrors of Agony. Pfeffernusse flavored aspirin was found to be hideously dangerous, and babies the size of strawberries were being born to women who were known paupers, and these babies had enormous heads the size of spoiling watermelons, and they whispered obscene remarks in sibilant Levantine waterfront pigeon. And they had lidless eyes and leering flaccid mouths. And they were born with pierced ears. And some were even born with garish metallic paper carnival hats. Their mothers felt repugnance at the lewd comments they uttered at breastfeeding time. And their limbs were unsightly thin and curling tendrils like withered asparagus bottoms, which were covered with the fine prickly hair. And they coiled and uncoiled continuously like tendrils in the sea, under the sea, you know.
Like marine tendrils.
Just always, you know, that hideous coiling, slow peristalsis movement. And when these tendrils were fragile and when they were pinched off, they grew right back, clutching insulting greeting cards. U.S. government mercy stations were set up to give the mothers free classes in stringing donut necklaces and pasting sequins on prune pit jewelry. And the creatures required maple syrup and Clorox enemas every half hour. Some mothers got prune pits stuck in the tubing, and their babies died amid horrid screams and rectal explosions of white-hot enema mixture. Many mothers dressed their babies elaborately in lace and spangles to overcompensate for the deformities. Some of the little creatures had 10-story-high feathered headdresses. Sometimes these headdresses got snarled in high-voltage telephone wires, and the mothers would...
Why don't you read it?
And the mothers would look down into the toddlers to see their babies incinerated, like so many blackened and dehydrated ostrich droppings.
when nice old ladies would peer into the baby carriages to tweak their cheeks and would instead vomit into the carriages, adding another knife into a mother's heart as she pushed the brimming carriage all the way across town in a raging hailstorm. I'm sorry.
What did he treat?
How could a mother hold down her
child? Very good, but why do you have to, like, go through all those things?
Honestly, I can't help it. I'm really... It breaks me up. I'm sorry.
Read it to... I'm sorry. If you read it to someone, you understand? Spare him all of that.
Okay, I'm sorry.
You just read it straight, and you laugh afterwards.
Yeah, it is funny, though.
It is.
True. Okay.
It's hilarious.
She would have to push the brimming mess all the way across town in a raging hailstorm. How could a mother hold down her job as a nightclub chanteuse and take care of the baby, too? In desperation, she took it around to commercial photographers to pose for telephoto close-up of flaccid anal openings. What? One Norwegian avant-garde literary review bought one of the pictures for an ironic account of the Andrea Doria sea collision. The Stockholm rammed her amidship. The Andrea Doria listed 45 degrees because she was top-heavy due to the fact that the hold had been emptied of its cargo of Shalimar perfume. The first class passengers had been permitted to swim in it. But it was discovered that a senile, silent movie, aquatic movie queen had not been coming out of the Shalimar when she had to pee. The liner was therefore made top heavy. She was due to come into New York the next afternoon. She was skimming through the night at a snappy clip. The last drop of Shalimar trembled on the lip of her bilge pump and shook off into the foaming Atlantic. Then there was a hideous crunching and splintering and snarling sound, and a shudder racked the unlucky boat. The pointed prow of the Stockholm had dildoed a gaping hole in her side. A startling and different freak effect had occurred. A fat middle-aged lady had been sleeping in au naturel in the top of a double-decker bunk, and the unusually spoon-shaped top of the prow of the Stockholm had acted as a pancake flipper and had scooped her up and flipped her onto the mangled mess that had been its own prow. The mysterious woman sat facing in towards the ship, perched near the edge among the tangled intaglio of prow wreckage. Her red hair fell down over her shoulders. Her large and pasty beer belly bobbled fatly. In the gray, disastrous light, she seemed luminous and vaguely nacreous. And one of the crew risked his own safety to crawl out to haul her to safety. Not till he almost reached her did he realize that she was dead, and she was totally bare-ass, but the crewman noticed that she wore a ring with a large blue stone upon one hand. He reached out for her hand to haul her in, but her entire arm came off when he jerked on it. He released the arm, and it dropped into the water, and he fought down the horrors and reached out for her hair to drag her in by that means. Agony and nausea fought for supremacy in his brain, which was about to burst into flames. And the woman's hennaed tresses came out in his grasp.
There was no way he could pull her off now, so he crawled back, racked with the agonizing revulsions and stunned by this encounter and with the overt hideousness of life on Earth in all of its rampaging hideousness. Wait, I think I repeated that word. In all of its rampaging, overtly obnoxious attributes. Later, that chunk of the prow that she was on fell off, and it took the mysterious woman with it. She was instantly devoured by a great many sharks which had been waiting below. The water was lashed into a froth of frenzied foam. Shortly thereafter, the monstrous baby investigations threw up startling revelations. Many housewives were raging dope fiends. They were continually up on reducing drugs, which were shockingly high in amphetamines and spirit lifters. They would get together in the daytime and get high as kites and cackle over coffee. Many college girls either imagined that they did or actually got high on Dristans, the debased pseudo-artistic scum that infest decomposing New York tenements, make tea of asthma cigarettes, and experimented with mold florets found on putrescent pussy sweetener. Debbie Reynolds claimed that the mystery woman was her scrub woman who had been junketing in Europe. A special line of cosmetics then appeared on the market for the monstrous babies. They sat up in their 18th century swan beds and applied enormous globs of the new foaming and hissing chunky style Phantom of the Opera pockmark filling smegma and extracted from oversexed suitcase handles and Posner's non-clotting scented spray mist pubic hair straightening glop picked out of the tiny scum traps and diamond tiaras and mocha eyeshadow scraped out of the tiny sperm-hungry cracks and sliding boards down which plummet hot and screaming little girls. Thank you.
Super overstimulate at night on the eve of the world's destruction, and at 56 Ludlow Street, I, Jack Smith, Mad Angus, and Tony sit about in a casual evening, Angus bowing on a mandolin, Tony tweaking another mandolin in the normal way, and I wearing all my jewels. I have three pairs of earrings on and five diamond bracelets and two necklaces and and 5 brooches. And I'm about to read my story, my short story, Lace Evening Gowns Damnée, which I will commence. And Francine fixed up this millionaire on some street corner on Halloween, and she was in drag. Halloween is the only night that Francine gets into drag. And once I met her on 8th Street, and she looked like a scrub woman. She was wearing a babushka, a house dress, sneakers, so forth. So she must have gotten into a ludicrous conversation with this millionaire about her longings for costume jewelry and doilies in her home, her happy home. And he probably saw how ludicrous it would be if she were covered with jewelry, and he offered to pay her expenses for 2 weeks of being a cunt at an expensive hotel in Miami Beach. And Francis Francine, my best friend, ex-hermaphrodite star of carnivals and sideshows, in the Atlantis Hotel in Miami Beach, with its giant conch-shaped lobby and its steaming lagoon pool. Oh, Francine, I said, it's pure stunning. The millionaire let her take me along. Oh, when can we go out shopping for our evening gowns, I cried. I want to wear nothing but evening gowns and just come out at night. Maybe I'll be a man in the day and a cunt at night. We could take turns being each other's escorts. I wanted us to have some homos brought up to our apartment and be fitted, but Francine didn't want to wait. She wanted to start that same night. So we went to a department store. Francine was wearing her double-breasted powder blue Bermuda shorts suit, powder blue long stockings, and white sandals. I was dressed as inconspicuously as possible. Frankie looked lowbrow, but she had a mad pseudo-hauteur that was her idea of how rich people act, and it stunned salespeople, or sort of paralyzed them temporarily, and they seemed to treat her with respect. You do the talking, I said. And very well, she said. A white-haired, elegant sales lady approached us as we had been hanging around for a few minutes. Horror and distaste dripped from her. Is there anything you wanted? She said. Yes, Frankie said in her rich woman's voice. Where are the evening gowns? What size? The woman said with disgust. Oh, Frankie said, and put her hands daintily on her waist. And there was a flaming silence. The saleswoman held her breath and pouted her lips and looked shrewdly at the saleswoman. My size. The saleswoman let off her breath, but didn't say anything. Her eyes were wide and fixed on Frankie. You see, said Frankie, I'm in theatricals. And indeed, she used to be in theatricals. I mean, in her carnival days, when she was Frances Francine, hermaphrodite star of sideshows. She went on to make it seem as if she didn't want to buy an evening gown, but she was thrown by circumstances into the position of having to. She, in fact, wasn't the least interested in evening gowns, as her casual and funny little cracks showed as we browsed among the EGs. We fought against our fate there amongst the EGs and grudgingly admired some of them, and the lovely darlings. I was stunned by one very drapey gold lamé job that exposed my back and had a slit skirt and slashed long sleeves. I always have to have high necklines to cover the hair on my chest, but Frankie's chest is perfectly hairless, so she always wears low necklines and stuffs her bras big as she can, almost pigeon-breasted. When the sales lady wasn't listening, we creamed about the EGs in whispers. But when she could hear what we were saying, we said sarcastic things about them, such as Arlene Dahl was born in this one, and Jean Harlow died in this one, and Gloria Jean was raped in this one, et cetera, et cetera. We pathetically tried to suck up as much impressions as we could, because we were hyper aware that we couldn't stay there forever, and we didn't want to become conspicuous by staying there too long, because we were secretly afraid that the whole store would find out. It was a struggle to remain calm. I heard a muffled scream from Frankie. "Oh, Jack, isn't this startling?" she said in a desperate whisper. I looked at the thing that she was holding, and my heart sank. It was a bouffant, powder blue job, all covered with ruffles and net and cabbage roses and ribbons and everything. "It looks like a Puerto Rican graduation dress," I said. "If she were to wear that thing, the game would be up, because no normal woman of her age would wear a thing like that. After all, you have to consider that Francine is pushing 40, and some of her front teeth are missing. Her figure has become somewhat square and muscular, and she has a pronounced hard features, and she would be surrealistic in that getup and attract as much attention, even if she were a woman, that we would, of course, be seen through not being cunts with all that amount of attention. Like, who would throw a glaring spotlight on something you wanted to cover up? No use to talk to her. It was her dream come true, the goosey that she never had as a girl. Better to get it over with. I also found myself a slinky black jet beater job with long sleeves and a chiffon cascade down the back. It had a drapey boat neckline. Then I talked Frankie into getting a divine tropical printed job that was all drapey and side swept. And we got quite a few more. In fact, we had bought 38 evening gowns when we left. They were all expensive ones, too. We were practically ecstatic when we left the department store, the evening gown department. In fact, we were ecstatic. They would be delivered late that afternoon. We couldn't decide whether to be blondes or brunettes, so we got a lot of different colored wigs. Our jewels would take another whole day to buy, but we had to have some for tonight. So I got a gigantic jet brooch, jet earrings, and a nice mess of diamond bracelets. Then we went to a delicatessen and got some caviar, cherry soda, potato salad, cold chicken, pickles, and Frankie wanted some Brussels sprouts, and her favorite vegetable, and I wanted chocolate eclairs. And we took all our packages up to our room. Our room was all white, the rug, the furniture, etc. I flung my cunt up on a chaise lounge, and Francine threw her pussy on the bed. Then she couldn't sit still no more, because she was overstimulated, and she threw on her house dress, and we turned on the TV and ate. I was so full, I passed out. I woke up when I heard people talking. The delivery boys were bringing our EGs. Frankie was being upset by the delivery boys. When they were gone, her nerves were badly shaken. I tried to be calm and comfort her. "Frankie, dear, let me make you some nice coffee and we'll lap up some chocolate eclairs," I said, to take her mind off the delivery boys. An hour later, and she was all right again, and cheerful. We realized with a thrill, though, that we had to try on our EGs. So we ran into the living room and snatched open all the boxes and had an EG orgy, trying them on. When I wanted to attract her attention, I would let off a scream, and she started screaming too. Soon we were both screaming out of overstimulation. The room simply shimmered with shrill screams. Then I think I got high, or reality disappeared, and I seem to be struggling for breath in a sea of evening gowns, and I thought that a volcano was going to erupt, e.g.s, and I realized that I could only wear one at a time, and so I had to choose one to climb up the sacred volcano in. I kept screaming at Frankie that we would all be showered with red-hot, liquescent, flaming EGs. Then I sunk senseless to the floor, the white fur rug floor, in a tight silver and black sequin job, and I lay there moaning and laughing as I imagined that each evening gown came to life with the appropriate movie queen in it. And we were all accusing each other of being whores and streetwalkers and screaming at the top of our gilded lungs. Frankie crawled to the phone and lay there on the floor in a flaming red bouffant number, ordering ice in her idea of the voice of a rich call girl. I couldn't take her, I couldn't talk her out of wearing her powder blue flounced job. So, in about midnight, we trailed down the grand staircase. I tried to look like I wasn't with her because beside the powder blue job, she had a yellow wig, a green brocade wrap, pink gloves, a handful of orchids, and silver eyeshadow. She had a mess of egret feathers in her hair. I was afraid she'd trip on the stairs. I was talking to her, but I was looking elsewhere with my eyes. Nobody noticed me anyway. I was very convincing in a white satin clinging job with a platinum blonde wig, and I carried a large ostrich feather fan that I could cover my face with when I spotted any plainclothesman or fuzz, and also I covered erections up with the fan. I wanted to go right to the Starlight Terrazzo, but Frankie wanted to cruise the grill. I told her she'd look ludicrous in there, but she insisted. While we were there, we ate some frankfurters with sauerkraut. Some low creatures let off different disgusting remarks, so we fled out of there. We milled around in the throng. I pretended to be haughty, but soon my eyes were wandering as usual. Quite a few stunning men looked at me with normal desire, but it only made me feel sad and ludicrous because I was not what they thought. True, I was not what they thought. And I seem to be honest. There's something about my honesty made me feel such a way. Oh well, I thought, I just have to dig it for its interesting qualities, if not for its pragmatic attributes. Oddly, Francine was going up in flames. She laughed and giggled and rolled her eyes. Her cheeks flushed hotly. I imagine they flushed hotly. She had so much makeup on that who knew what was going on under there. And her eyes were sparkly, and she said that she felt bubbly. Ah, Francis, Francine, enjoy yourself tonight, I thought to myself, for someday you will be dead, my dear.
Also, you know, dripping with the echoes and reflections and memories and the sadness of the bereavement to us all by the departure of Maria Montez, whose gilded absence will always create so irreconcilable niche in our hearts, you know, at whose passing, also floating away
you know, covered with gardenias to the ceiling and disappeared after the mermaid's tail. If it were possible to get back at this point to such a Cecil Beaton part of the afternoon that was somehow embroidered into the blue vein afternoon of this shimmering thing that I had thought to, this pattern that I had sought to fling before your eyes in this, in the form of this tissue which would cover the, like a net over the water as the transition between the water to the air and achieving sort of a unity in a puff of steam as it emerged from the Turkish bath in the Florida Keys. The ceiling, the empty ceiling of which, if that were possible to record, to know the of that. The pea green, cheap water, the nasty, the pea green corn, the horrible pea green corn. It shattered my rooted ears. Two. Was revealed by someone is on the altar, someone is lying on the altar. Who of what? Who of whom? And the mouse melts. Morning. Disappearing reality. As the curtain just collapsed, revealing an innerspring mattress. Which was serving as protection from burglars, dripping with mouse milk, and being forgotten forever, and shimmering cascades of mouse milk disappearing over the waterfalls of endless yearning Chinas, gaping Grand Central, in the mountains, participate in the sacrifice, and I suppose it was worth it once, but but if it had to, if it all has to be left behind in the red patterns of mouse milk, donut company ads, somehow turning it to geometric and back through a painting to disappear in linoleum patterns, which are the true source of everyday life. You see, the very linoleum, the forgotten Turkish patterns that about a century of misuse, the hands of artists and models. And the battalions of all the drowning Chinese and can that now disappear into mouse milk ripples? Oh, marvelous. If so, farewell, moldy moment. Moment of affected rapture.
From 88 megahertz up to 108.
You've got this frequency. We're going to call you CKUT. You've got this frequency. 98.3. That frequency is what you're picking up when you tune that radio.
Very impressive.
You can shut on the motor, it looks like they're picking up CKUT, clear as a bell.
Fascinating. Your analysis seems logical.
CKUT. 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 CKUT is on the air.